The following presentation is the City Council Candidates Forum held October 22nd, 2018 at the Belfast Boathouse. The format is that there's a moderator, Linda Lord, and no open mic. Questions are written on cards collected by Petra Hall and given to the moderator. The edits made in this recording are mostly boosting people's voices when they trailed off, eliminating the sounds of mic passing between the speakers. Nothing of substance is missing from this presentation. The first speaker you'll hear is Petra Hall, who organized this event for Belfast Community Radio and Belfast Community Television.
Enter and sign in, please. I'd like to welcome you all to the 2018 Belfast City Council Candidates Forum. I want to thank you all for attending. I'm Petra Hall from WBFY, Belfast Community Radio. This is an event which I want to let you know is being filmed and recorded by the wonderful Ned Leitner of Belfast Community Television, BCTV, and it will be available at various times on BCTV before the November 6th election, and also will be broadcast at various times at WBFY 100.9 FM Belfast Community Radio. Yay, local community media. Our moderator tonight is Linda Lord. Linda Lord is currently the chair of the Brooks Planning Board. She served on the select board in Brooks for 9 years, and I might add, she has been the only woman ever on their board so far. She retired as the Maine State Librarian, and until more recently, she was a member of the State Board of the League of Women Voters of Maine. We are honored to have Linda Lord here tonight to facilitate the 2018 Belfast City Council Candidates Forum, and I'd also like to acknowledge the League of Women Voters of Maine for providing assistance for this event. Also, they have a wonderful, easy-to-read voter guide for the entire state of Maine, so you can catch that online at League of Women Voters of Maine. It's lwvme.org. There are also some of these copies around town. Now, we have six council candidates who are running for three ward seats. And before I introduce them, I just want to remind everybody that it does not matter what ward you live in, we vote for candidates in all wards. Okay, that's the Belfast rules. So everybody here are people that you can vote for. Maybe not all six. Over here is Paul Dean running for Ward 5. He's on the ballot. Then Joanne Mosswild, she's running for Ward 2 on the ballot. Mary Mortier, who is an incumbent councillor of ours, of Ward 1, and she's on the ballot, yes. And I say that because we do have write-ins and people who are listed on the ballot officially, so you need to know that. Okay. Over here, Jim Merkel, who is a write-in for Ward 5, and we have incumbent councillor Neil Harkness for Ward 2 on the ballot, and write-in candidate Ellie Daniels for going for Ward 1. So with all of that information under your belts, I'd like to introduce Linda Lord and thank her very much for coming. Okay.
Good evening, everybody. We're going to start right in. Each candidate has been presented with a question about why they're running for the council, what they think Belfast's biggest problem or issue is, and what they would do to help resolve that issue. And they have drawn numbers to see who speaks in what order. And we're going to start right in. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond to that question. We have a timekeeper, property owner in Belfast, but lives in Massachusetts, so completely neutral, as am I, obviously. I think that's okay to say. And we're going to start right off with, let's see, number one was Paul Dean. So, Paul, go right ahead. And do you want to come up here and use the microphone? Oh, you've got one right there. Great. See it right there?
I wanted everybody to be able to see me. My opening statement as a candidate is critical. I should speak to the creative ideas I have to bring more rentals to the city, or ways to keep our taxes level while sustaining our city services we all enjoy. But first, I must talk about other things. On Facebook this last weekend, candidate interviews on the radio, I am being called a newcomer. Just between you and me, some of the nicest people I've met in Belfast are newcomers. But no, I am not a newcomer. I was born and brought up in Belfast. I've attended the local school system, worked at the Bucksport Mill, and I've met the love of my life, Susan, who I've been married to for 40 years. And I have two nice sons. Now, I'm retired and living on a fixed income. I've spent 11 years serving on the Comprehensive Plan Committee. I've learned the importance of listening to people and hearing what the public has to say. The committee captured that input to create a plan now in front of the City Council. For the past 2+ years, I have attended all but 2 City Council meetings, from opening to closing. I did that so I could learn the process and best serve the Belfast taxpayers if elected. Second, after months of planning to run for City Council, it just doesn't feel like a 2-person race. I feel like I'm running against 30 people. When I knock on doors, it's just me. Not a group of people whose only interest is just one thing, no fish farm. This no fish farm group has held center stage these past several months and have scared the Belfast residents half to death. They have had some good questions because I've heard them, but they have also had a lot of half-truth statements.
Time.
Thank you very much.
And the next presenter is Mary Mortier.
Good evening. Can you hear in the back?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Mary Mortier. This would be the 4th term as City Councilor that I'm running for this election. And I, with my husband, first came to Belfast in 1989 and jumped into the community in many different forms and formats since then. And many of you, I'm looking around the room at faces of people that I know and people that I don't. And so a little bit about my background. I've got a lot of leadership and organizational skills that I believe that I bring to the council. I've served in the community in volunteer capacities on the chamber board and on the garden club, Rotary Club, Force Behind Years by the Bay for 18 years, and I'm currently on the Our Town Belfast board and have served on the Economic Restructuring Committee within Our Town Belfast. I am a person who believes that we were given 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. I like to think that I listen twice as long as I speak. I feel as if when I have something to say that's meaningful, that's when I speak. I have a record that's out there for people who want to stream council meetings or watch council meetings, and I hope that that record stands me in good stead as we move forward. We have a great group of candidates here this year. It's exciting to be having this forum, and I'm so thankful that all of you have showed up. One of the reasons that we moved to this community was because it was an engaged community, and so I thank you for that.
Thank you, Mary. And the next speaker is Ellie Daniels. Oh, they have one. Great.
Good evening. I want to thank you all for coming out tonight. My name's Ellie Daniels, and I'm a write-in candidate for Ward 1, City Council, running against Mary Mortier. I've lived in Waldo County since 1983. My wife and I have raised 6 children who have given us 9 grandchildren. I've had a 37-year career as a midwife and own the Green Store on Lower Main Street for the past 25 years. I served 2 terms on the Belfast School Board in the 90s and was active on the Economic Restructuring Committee of Our Town Belfast. I've helped to raise money for the YMCA and Waterfall Arts and served 3 terms on the Waldo County Fund for the Maine Community Foundation. As many of you know, the springboard to this candidacy, my springboard, has been the proposal to locate a massive industrial salmon operation here in Belfast, which I'm opposed to. Nordic Aqua Farms is a critical issue, but even more important to me is that the city's process over the salmon facility is a symptom of a diminishing of the democratic process in our city. If I'm elected, I will bring a fresh commitment to true deep democracy in our city. Deep democracy holds transparency and citizen participation central in all city deliberations and activities. I pledge to bring the taxpayers into the budget process that determines how our taxes are spent, the residents into the zoning and planning decisions that impact where we live, the workers into the decisions made about industry and business that affect the work environment and wages, and the voices of all citizens into dialogue that sets the course for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellie. The next speaker is Jim Merkel.
Thank you, everybody, for coming. My name is Jim Merkel, and I'm running for Ward 5. I'm an engineer, educator, writer, filmmaker, and community organizer. I have a film that's in production now called Saving Walden's World, and it features powerful women around the world. I came to Maine in the 60s when my truck driver dad saved enough money to build a wooden boat, lobster boat, for our family of 9 kids. My childhood was spent fishing and boating. They retired here in the 70s, opening Quietside Campground in Tremont. I returned in 2001 to care for my aging, very conservative father in his final years. I became Dartmouth's first sustainability coordinator, met my sweetheart Susan president of Come Boating, and we came to Maine in 2008 to start a family. We began sawing timbers on our land to build an off-the-grid house. I'm running because the Belfast that I love is at a crossroads. We just have so much going for us, a lively, engaged, friendly community, arts, music, incredible nature, the Penobscot Bay, an authentic town that's still open for business in the winter. I'm concerned that we are again attempting to anchor our economy on a too-big-to-fail enterprise that has little track record. What if, after several mysterious die-offs, the tanks are empty, covering 18 football fields of our southern greenbelt? What if wells are damaged or the bay's ecosystem is further driven into collapse? I will work for a vibrant economy, a new economy that is local, organic, small and medium scale, and sustainable. Being a member of the Pedestrian Biking and Hiking Committee for 4 terms, I'm now the chair. I'll work to improve sidewalks for elders and handicapped, safe bike lanes for those who want to reduce their carbon emissions. And I will work for safe sidewalks and bike lanes in East Belfast, where I currently live, so the busy roads that connect us to other communities will be safe. Thanks. Right in, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. Our fifth speaker is Joanne Mosswild.
Hi. My name is Joanne Mosswild, and I've lived in Belfast for about 24 years. I currently work at the hospital. I've been there for about 19 years. My husband and I have raised Emma and Soren, who are off at college now. I'm currently serving on the Belfast Harbor Committee. I'm running for Belfast City Council Ward 2 because I'd like to be part of the conversation about the future of Belfast. The conversation this election season is about the challenges we share as a community and the creative solutions we can reach by working together. Free exchange of ideas is essential to finding new solutions to any problem. And there are divisive issues in our community at this time that can thwart the process of working together. So let's have the conversation first be about finding the things that we all have in common. And then we can work toward answers together from our common ground. We can work together to move Belfast forward to a future that benefits everyone. Things I'm working toward: balancing responsible development and environmental stewardship in a healthy, local, sustainable economy while preserving our unique character as Belfast. I want to develop creative and sustainable solutions for affordable housing, balance lower taxes with fiscal responsibility, and advocate for inclusivity and transparency in our government. Promoting our working waterfront and protecting our marine resources is paramount. I also want to be able to respond to the challenges of climate change and building resilience into our systems. And foremost, fostering communication, understanding, and unity in Belfast and Waldo County. Thanks.
Thank you. For the people standing in the back, there are seats to my left. You may not be able to see them. If you're comfortable where you are, that's great. But just to let you know, there are seats to my left. And the last candidate to speak for the opening statement is Neil Hartness.
Thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight. And it looks like a real packed house. That's great. Belfast is not afraid of the future. We built ships, made shoes, sewed garments, processed chickens and sardines. We have been farmers and merchants and bankers. We have smoked salmon and caught lobsters, manufactured windows and frozen food. We have always changed and adapted. We are not going to start fearing the future now. I am proud of the work that has been done in my two terms as a counselor and honored to have been a part of it. We have made tremendous strides towards energy independence. We have improved city infrastructure. I am proud of the progress we have made in refashioning our general assistance program into one that gives needy citizens more help at a lower cost. I am proud to have voted to approve the request for Belfast Ave Pride and to have been allowed the privilege of representing the city at our first menorah lighting. I am very proud to have taken the lead on establishing our community radio station, which is sponsoring this event. But I am humbled when I speak to citizens who are struggling to get by, often reluctant to ask for help. I will speak for them as I am able. They need relief from the burden of high taxes, relief that can only come from economic development. I look forward to tonight's discussion. I trust the people of Belfast to make their decision in this election, not on their fears, but on their hopes.
Thank you very much. We'll now start with questions that have been handed in on these index cards from you all. And there's one collector that just turned some in. The other collector is in the back in the black and white striped vest with the black cap. So if you have questions, get them to one of those people. And I'm going to start with Paul, go right down the line, and then the next question I'll start with Joanne, and they have 1 minute to respond. So the first question that I've received is, Paul, please outline your experience in Belfast government. You have 1 minute.
The Belfast Comprehensive Plan Committee that I was on, I spent 11 years doing that. And we went around in the public and met and had neighborhood meetings. Our one sole job was to listen to people and get their input. And I had to learn to listen and to hear what they said. And I did. So once the comp plan was handed to the council, it hasn't moved forward. They've approved the land use section, but the rest has been sitting there idle. And the council's been very busy, but I expect that to move forward in the near future. I've spent the last 2 years attending council meetings, as I said earlier, from start to finish. And it's learn the process. So that's some of what I've done. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Thank you.
Same question.
Please, Joanne, same question.
Well, I've attended several council meetings, and I have spoken to the council in open to the public and during some hearings, not only regarding the Nordic project, but also regarding the airport and the Harbor Comprehensive Plan. I've been on the Harbor Committee now for at least 2 years, maybe going on three. I did help to develop the Harbor Committee, the Harbor Comprehensive Plan that was put into effect about a year and a half ago. I really enjoyed that work, and I've enjoyed getting to know all the councilors through talking with them about various issues, and I've enjoyed my campaigning, which isn't necessarily in government, but it's learning about how to be in government. So I've enjoyed all my conversations with everyone, and I look forward to serving more. Thank you.
So before I was elected to the council the first time 6 years ago, I served on several council subcommittees. One was on parking, And one was the Vibrancy Committee, which has led to a lot of the developments that have turned Belfast into the wonderful town we all enjoy today. On the council, I have been involved in two different three-year contract negotiations with both the Police Department and the Public Works Department, and my focus is on economic development. I have a business background, and that's one of the major things I bring to the council, especially when it comes to our budget reviews, and I am fiscally conservative.
Thank you.
My daughter went to Crosby Junior High School, and in the middle of her seventh grade year, the school was closed with no notice, and the kids were shipped out to the Armory and local churches and the VFW Hall, where they went to school the rest of their seventh grade year, kind of separated from one another. And that led me to run for the school board, the local school board. And during that time, I learned a lot about balancing the desire for neighborhood kinds of walkable schools into more consolidated schools to cut down on energy use and maintenance of older buildings and so forth. I also worked on the Economic Restructuring Committee of our town, Belfast, and participated in taking a downtown inventory of our downstairs and upstairs commercial and residential spaces, and that was a very enlightening process.
I think I said most of what I would say now in my opening statement. I think the first time I ever addressed the Belfast City Council was during the big motorcycles downtown brouhaha, if any of you remember that, the boycott Belfast over motorcycle noise thing. I've been a member of the council now for two terms. And it's been a great experience, one I would like to continue. You work with some really great people, not just on the councilors, but I will take a little bit of my time here to talk about the people who work for this city. We have such an exceptional city staff from the top on down. And lately, I think some people have gone a little over the line in some of their criticisms of city staff. Council sets policy. Council makes decisions. The hardworking people who carry it out deserve nothing but respect. You can walk into City Hall or any of the other city offices at any time and find out for yourself what a great city we have here and what great people we have working for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm on the fourth term of the Bike, Pedestrian, Hiking Committee, and I'm the chair of it now. Over the years, what we do is we do surveys every year. Our committee members go out and walk and see where the sidewalks aren't working or where, say, a person in a handicapped wheelchair has to basically ride in a rut. When you go to survey, you'll see a rut that's maybe 6, 8, 10 inches deep, and their wheelchair falls off. So we look at those every year. We give that list to city manager, and he seems to figure out how he can do some of that. We also this year put up new bike racks in about four or five locations, had the tech center involved with painting and creating them. They're quite artful, and we look to do more of those. We also have created several new bike lanes, and when I first got on the committee, we were going to put this big esplanade up to Route 3, but it was going to have to move the curb, and I argued in my first three meetings that we shouldn't do that. We should just stripe a bike lane, and we ended up saving a lot of money by doing that.
Thank you. The next question from attendees concerns Airbnb type rentals. And we'll start with you, Joanne, on this question. Businesses operating in residential areas don't have any oversight. Many small towns and cities are coming to grips with this issue. My main concern is noise issues with these properties as a parade of people flow through these homes without regard for the rights of abutting residents. And how would you propose dealing with that, Joanne?
Okay, if noise, well, it seems like the whole idea of Airbnb is quite complicated. So it sounds like some people are trying to maybe increase their income by having an Airbnb in their home, and it may cause some problems in a residential area. An Airbnb seems like it's kind of a business, and if that starts happening in a residential area, I think that it can cause some problems. It depends on the volume that a person, you know, if there's large groups coming into the home repeatedly, as opposed to maybe one bedroom being rented out. So I think there needs to be some regulations. I also think it's a place where we can get revenue for the city, a lodging tax perhaps, and I think the city should be looking at greater regulation overall. Thank you. Not so that people can have Airbnbs, but it needs to be regulated, and I think the city can get some revenue.
So Airbnbs are a relatively young and new phenomena in Belfast itself, and it happens to be one of the most common questions that the planning department is confronted with on a daily basis now. People who are coming in and looking at properties to purchase, many of them are looking for what are the answers and regulations as relate to Airbnb-type rental situations or short-term rentals. The difficulties that we seem to be experiencing in the neighborhood so far relate mainly to owners who are either out of town, out of state, or have nobody overlooking the property management of the properties that are being rented as short-term rentals. And that seems to be where the real problem lies. We're not big enough yet to warrant really full, hard restrictions, and hopefully we won't get there in the brand new future.
Thank you.
It sounds like we have a lot of thoughts in common. I think that also that Airbnb is a relatively new industry, and we have to treat it like that. I do believe if there isn't an owner on site in a building, that that building ought to be required to be in an appropriately zoned area, and that our planning committee should be passing codes for the management of Airbnb so that neighbors and local police both have the burdens of crowd control taken off of them. I also think that many cities and towns have passed lodging taxes, which in Maine, Airbnb would be glad to collect that tax at the point of a reservation on the Airbnb and pass it through to the city without fees to the city for doing that. I also think that there's a lot of people flying under the radar, and perhaps we should have an Airbnb registration in our town that comes with a fee and produces some revenue.
I'll agree with Ellie's last point there. We're talking about dealing with a problem without having any real idea of the scope of the problem, because we have no idea how many Airbnbs might be out there, where they're located, how often they're used, who owns them, whether they're locals or out-of-towners, and I think that's where we need to start before we can really get a grip on things. I think it's great. I know people who that's the only way they're keeping their homes is by being able to make a little income off of Airbnb. But when I hear stories about people coming into the planning board saying, I'm looking for a house to buy so that I can turn it into an Airbnb, you know, that's probably not a single family home. That's probably a building that's already divided into apartments. We've got enough trouble trying to find affordable places for working people to live in this town without that being added to it. So I would say number one is to get a grip on what the problem is before we can really do anything about it.
Yeah, everybody here had some really good thoughts on that. And for me, it seems that it's part of the new gig economy, and it's something that I think for someone who needs to earn some extra income, it's a great thing. It's not that hard to do if you own a house and you want to convert a small backyard unit and make some extra income. I think that should be encouraged and not highly regulated. But like everyone said, I think we need to pay attention to where it is becoming problematic, where someone's doing it for a business and has two or three different places. And how it impacts our affordable housing, I think, is very important. And we should be expanding affordable housing prospects for people. And I heard that going door to door, people who are renting are being priced out. And because someone can make a lot of money on an Airbnb, but we may saturate with them, but still I think we need to defend our affordable housing and then enforce laws that where people are making nuisances. We have laws, we should enforce them, but also then be wise about the regulation.
And Paul.
First, I'd approve it, but there need to be regulations. It's very important. An Airbnb next to me that was noisy, you know, and bothers my way of life would be something I'd have a problem with. So rules and regulations are important, but home occupation is important too. People need to have a way to make money to help pay the taxes and to live, to put a roof over their head. And the other thing that would go along with this is a good safety discussion. How to inspect these places to make sure they have adequate smoke detectors so the people that do come to Belfast can leave Belfast. So it's a big discussion. I've heard a lot of good ideas, and I would approve of it in Belfast with certain limitations. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the City Council Candidates Forum, held October 22nd, 2018, at the Bose House.
And we'll start with Joanne, if I may use first names, on this next question. And this involves climate change. What do you think are the highest priorities as Belfast prepares to adapt to climate change, and how should the city deal with those priorities? In 1 minute.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's start with what's right out here in front of us, which is water. We have a lot of our assets on the water, and the water is one of our assets. So I think that we need to pay attention to the increased intensity of storms to protect our waterfront, and also in our planning and protection of existing buildings, we need to keep in mind sea rise. So, and small things, you know, aside from the water, small things like having cars not idle at traffic lights, continuing to look for alternative energy like the solar panels that the city is using to do more things like that. I don't know if we can get another collection of solar panels that we can use, perhaps for public, not just for the municipal use. So those are some areas where we can start. Thanks.
There's a great deal of overlap between climate change and energy efficiency. And the city for the last 3-4 years has been working proactively in trying to address these very large issues that are long-term issues that we address in many different ways. There doesn't seem to be any question that the sea is getting warmer and that the height of the water is increasing as the icebergs melt. And so looking at the structures along our waterfront, our working waterfront, is very important as we move forward on every issue related to the waterfront. And we've had erosion this past year in quite a few places along the waterfront from the unusual storms that we've had that's a part of climate change. But energy efficiency is very related to this, and we've been doing work with both solar panels and getting off fiber off of fossil fuels as long-term direction that the city is taking.
I agree about water. Water is the new oil. And this past summer, there was an article in the Bangor Daily that stated that 71% of Mainers were living in drought-affected areas, and that rather than our aquifers being most seriously affected, it was actually our watersheds, because watersheds depend on saturation of the soil in order to replenish. And our storms are coming faster in hard downpours, and there's more runoff. And so the watersheds are slower to refill than the aquifers, actually. And I also think our choice of industries that we bring into our town is critical as we approach a time of climate change. And if there's one thing that can be said about an industry that needs to pump 24/7 in order to keep tons and tons and tons of fish alive, it's extremely carbon intensive, and all the industry publications would tell you that.
If you think that we haven't already seen the effects of climate change in Belfast, go down to City Park, go down to the parking lot by the water, and take a look at the erosion there. You'll notice there's a hurricane fence up there now. That's to keep you from walking over the area that has been hollowed out by some of the recent storms that have been mentioned. At the footbridge, both ends of the footbridge are being eroded away. These are important issues we have to deal with right now on a practical matter. It's great to talk about the abstracts, but we have to do something. We're going to have to build things. We're going to have to do something to shore up the footbridge, to make sure that the bottom of City Park doesn't wash away. And that's going to require revenue. We need to find new revenue if we're going to address these issues.
Yeah, I quit my job in 1989 selling arms to when the Valdez oil spill hit. And I've been living simple since then. I live off the grid now. But that gave me a lot of experience. And when I worked at Dartmouth College, we had 110 buildings. So we inventoried every single building and we went one by one decreasing energy. So one thing is, climate is changed by us burning energy. So personal, institutional, schools, that's where we have to go. And cars are usually the biggest impact item for any of us. And that's why I'm on the bike committee. And also homes need to be better insulated. And that we can go home by home by home. And the thing about saving the climate, we save money. Because every bit of energy you burn is costly. And so by living off the grid or by moving toward very low, very efficient homes, you can save incredible amount of money. And often these things have a quick payback time. So, yeah, I'd also say the personal choices really have to lead.
Okay. For Belfast, sea rise is the most critical global warming event we have locally. City Council has just looked at on their capital projects to put somewhere in around the neighborhood of $20,000 to working on both ends of the Amasis Bridge. And there are going to be more costs to this area that are going to have to deal with what's happening with our salt water. Another issue in this community is we're in the mid-coast area and we're actually designated as being a drought condition area. That's because of the lack of rain we've had in the summer. I raise a garden and I know. But wind is a big issue in this community. And what can we do to solve problems like this? Try to save your water. Try to use. I go to yard sales. That's a big help. I buy older things. I don't need new. Thank you.
Please explain your recommendation or whether, I'm sorry, let me redo that. Please explain whether or not you think that retirees should be taxed at a higher rate.
Okay.
I'm reading it, gang.
I think that's not exactly what the questioner meant. I think they meant, should retirees be taxed at a lower rate, would be my understanding of. I see what it says, but that makes no sense. Makes no sense.
I'm not taking questions to direct people. Everybody's going to have a chance to explain, and you don't have to invite me back next year if you don't like that.
You're doing a great job. Just
answer the question you wish to
answer. Okay. Is it still that question, or is there clarification?
I can only read the questions. I don't know what else to do. If you want to discard this question and submit it in a different format that the candidates can understand, feel free to do that, and I'll ask it again. How's that?
Okay.
Great. I'll just tuck that away for a minute. That was kind of fun while it lasted. Okay. Oh, I love this one. What is your position on the Belfast Free Library? Should it be funded by taxpayers versus other possible sources? And how do you want to tackle that one, Joanne?
Mary,
I'm sorry.
So the city budget right now, we support the Belfast Free Library to the tune of $400,000+ a budget year. And that is not the total cost. There are costs that are covered by the library itself. And the Friends of the Library are very active in fundraising and further support. It's a wonderful community service. It's a very important community service. One of the things that maybe some of us in the room don't realize is how important it is to people who don't have good broadband coverage and will actually sit in their cars outside or come in to do homework or business or just to get on the internet. It is one of our best services in the community and one that the council fully supports and is always looking for ways to support them better than we currently do. But it is a costly effect, and we have slightly increased costs to out-of-town users in the past year. And it's something that we talk about frequently, and I was just told to stop.
Thank you, Mary.
Well, I think libraries are important because literacy is important, and I can't really personally imagine a conscious community eliminating community support, financial support for their library. I think that there are many, many citizens also who would turn out to help support the library through increased fundraising if it was requested of them and so forth. And I think that libraries are one of our critical community centers where people come together, where there's reading times for children, and where there's no-cost reading materials and internet access for people who need a space to get out of the weather and be quiet. And you heard about the librarian. The man came up to the librarian and said, "I'd like a burger and a Coke and fries." And the librarian said, "But sir, this is a library." Oh, I got it backwards. And then he whispered it. Oh, I was on the spot.
Mary, as Mary pointed out, a large amount of the funding for the library does come from the trust funds and Friends of the Library and the fundraising, and not just from the city. But the city does spend a lot of money on the library, as it should be. Outside funding may come with strings. You take money from a corporation or a foundation, they may have an agenda. Where I do think we can make some progress, as Mary alluded to, is we have a bit of a free rider problem in that every property owner in this room, every taxpayer in this room, pays more per year to support the library than someone from out of town who comes in and gets a card as an out-of-towner. The fee is less than what you pay as the average of taxes. The solution to this long-term would be for the state to help fund service center libraries. This idea has been brought up again and again, but has always been blocked in Augusta.
Yeah, I support libraries, and my family has been called by Steve down there at the library, high users. We have the max out at our home at all hours of the day and year, and I think it's one of the greatest institutions in America. It's free and open to everybody. I would like it to be supported and even expanded whenever possible. And also, if do more with fundraising, and people who are well off can often, you know, be encouraged to really be generous and donate. And I think we could also work to find other creative solutions, like we have heard from tonight, that would, seek funding whenever we can that could help shore up the budget. Yeah.
I like the way the library is funded at this time. Sounds like good stuff, and that's what we need in the city of Belfast. It's been a while since I've been to a library, but my wife goes quite often. She likes the book swap between the libraries. You can go in and get a book, and if they don't have it, they'll send to another local library and they'll bring it in. That's good stuff. My sons went to the library a lot growing up and used it. I haven't. I've been working for a long time, and finally I have some time off, and I've been gardening and enjoying that a lot. I'm going to need to go, I can see that, and learn more about gardening. But I do. I like the way it's funded right now, and if we're going to change any funding like that, let's have a good conversation, because I like it the way it is. Thank you.
Hi. I'm glad that we give the library $400,000 a year. It's money well spent, and if we could ever give them more, we should do that. I think it would be great to look for grants, of course, grants that have no strings attached, as Neil said, and also fundraise, and we can all support that with donations of our own. And certainly our family uses the library a lot, not only the books, but all the programming that happens down in the Abbott Room, and I'm really grateful for that. I think it's a hub of our community. And anybody who has ideas about how we can get more money for the library, I would love to hear from you. Thanks.
Guess what these are questions about? And they all, for the most part, deal with a different aspect or a specific aspect, And I don't know if this is kosher, but can I just go through these really fast? And if you think this is a critical issue, would you put your hands up? Because I'm scared we won't get through all of these. And I want to deal with what is most important to most of you. Okay? This question is specifically about green crabs. This question is about selling water since they intend to use water from their aquifer on their land. Water aquifer. Water aquifer. And about the salmon farm intend to use water from their aquifer on their land. You want the question to that? Okay, that's an ask. And this question, I guess it goes back to the water. We have an aging water system in Belfast. And how is that going to impact or be dealt with given the new fish farm? Sort of. Okay, we'll make that number two. And this is, what if this doesn't pan out and we have made agreements to them if they sell to a larger corporation with which we have no agreements? How can we be sure the Nordic Enterprise will result in lower taxes for us locally? Okay. Top of the pile. Okay. Here's a good one. For those who, former school teacher many years ago, for those who support the fish farm, what would cause you to forego your support? For those who oppose the fish farm, what would cause you to support it? Oh, you agree with me. That's a good one. Okay, got it. Will there be a performance bond to protect us if the fish farm doesn't work out and they leave, so we don't have an industrial waste area? What guarantees do we have that we will not actually have more expenses to fork out in city services to support the fish farm? Okay, I'm going to set that one aside. We can get to it if we have time. If Nordic proposals are approved, do you think Nordic should put up a bond or escrow account that will take the risk off the city's back if the experiment fails? Oh, excellent. That's in there then. Excellent. Will affluent from fish farm contribute to expansion of, oh, that's the green cab one. Crab one. Set that aside for a minute. Okay. So I'm going to start with the one that seemed to get the most reaction, and this time we're starting with Ellie. Again, for those who support the fish farm, what would cause you to forego your support? For those who oppose the fish farm, what would cause you to support it? And I'll repeat it as often as I need to. Just let me know if you need to hear it again.
Well, I oppose the fish farm, and I would say that the number one reason that I oppose it is that it's too big, it's theoretical, it's never been proven at this scale, and if something were to change my mind, it would be having the fish farm be a much vastly smaller green model fish farm, such as is happening in some cities like New Orleans right now, where the water is recirculated through hydroponic plantings such as watercress that cleanse it in that way, and then filtered through peat moss kinds of marshy areas, and then recirculated back through the fish tanks again. There's actually 8,000 acres in southern Spain that is a huge fish farm that turns out about 5,000 tons a year. It's a bird refuge. They grow rice. They grow green hydroponic vegetables, and that would be something that might change my mind.
I have supported the process of allowing this to go forward, and that is what we have done. We have allowed it to go forward. We have not approved any plan. We have not said, yes, they can build this plant at this size, use this much water, put this big a pipe out. None of that has been approved. What the council approved, and I supported, was that we allow them to ask. It would be irresponsible, in my mind, to do otherwise. What would make me change my mind? Let's go through the process as it is set up. Let's see what their plan is. Let's hear what the DEP has to say, what the Army Corps has to say. These people on the planning board are not pushovers. They are going to put them through the ringer on making sure that what they're building will work here. And that's my position. Let's see how it goes. Okay, thanks.
I possibly could support it if it was not in our current green belt or open space, if it was in a brownfield, if it was much smaller, if it didn't put out 13 times the nitrogen of our city sewer, maybe one quarter the nitrogen of our sewer. I don't even know if I'd want one quarter more than that out into the bay. But if it was used to grow fish to release and help to recover our wild stocks, I'd be really wild for it. If it was locally owned, I'd be much more interested. If it was a tested technology, I'd be much more interested. And if it didn't use new water, if the water was so clean, and I heard that some folks said they would drink it, if it's so clean, maybe it could just recycle and not be taking 1.7 million gallons a day and not be putting 7.7 million gallons out of effluent every day. And also the thing of trenching 8 foot deep, 20 foot wide right now, the permit's out, and it's only 1,900 feet out. It went from 1.5 miles out to one to, now it's at 1,900 feet. So we keep having changes.
The city council is just finishing up on phase one, and we're going to be going into phase two, which is the permitting phase. And I'm going to be at those state and federal meetings asking hard questions. I'm interested in what's going to be coming out of the outfall pipe. I'm interested in how their piping's going to be. I come from working in a mill, in a power plant, and I understand the importance of having good piping for a system. But there are things that would make me not want this to come to Belfast. But I need the proof in front of me. I need to hear what they have to say. I don't want to rely on things that just make me afraid. I need to be able to actually listen and make up my own mind like we all do. By having things that would hurt Belfast, I would vote against it in a heartbeat. Thank you.
Hi, I have a number of concerns about the fish farm, but when people ask me, well, what would make it okay? I always say, boy, if it could be smaller, maybe a quarter of the proposed size, maybe 10 acres instead of 40 or 45. If they were pumping a lot less water out into the bay, and if they were using less fresh water, and also if they were on an already industrialized site. And I would also like to see proven technology. But I, too, will watch the process. I want to learn things. You know, maybe it'll be great, but it seems like there are so many opportunities for it to be a problem that I am very cautious and concerned for the well-being of all of us and of Belfast.
So I'm supportive of the process going forward. From day one when the council was brought into the conversation, my first reaction was maybe a little different from others in the room, because in a previous career, before I moved to Belfast, I worked in clothing manufacturing, and I traveled about half the year around the world and dealt in a lot of countries around the world with foreign countries and manufacturing. And so that particular aspect was not frightening or scaring to me. I believed that from an economic development point of view, from revenues into the future, and from resources, financial resources to the water department to repair water lines that are over 100 years old, that this is an important potential economic development vehicle for the city and the taxpayers. And I want the process to go forward to learn more with the various investigations.
Thank you. Thank you. The next question that you really wanted answered, priority, was how can we be sure the Nordic enterprise will result in lower taxes for us locally? And we'll start with Neil.
Thank you. This is a very good question, and there's a lot of confusion. I looked it up today. When MBNA came to town, the city's mill rate dropped 2.5 points with a development much smaller, much less valuable than this is. One of the things people don't know, and I didn't know anything about until I got on city council, was some of the benefits where the city can use what are called BEDDIES, business equipment tax exemptions, to keep more of the tax dollars from their property taxes here rather than sharing with Augusta. That will help us as well. I cannot say this is in stone. You will get lower taxes. I don't know what the schools are going to do. I don't know what kind of state government we're going to have. But I can guarantee you that if I am still on the city council, I will work. I have said all along, I want lower taxes to get more housing, and that's what I will vote for.
It's quite a subject around the country is on smart growth, and I was recently at a conference in Bangor, and often what we're finding is big development usually doesn't pay their way. That happens across the country because the municipality has to add all these additional services that weren't anticipated, and in the end, people's taxes don't go down. So I'm walking door to door, and people are saying that their taxes never went down when Front Street came or other big developments. So, and I think it's quite risky that our taxes won't go down and will go up. And one of the reasons is the industry, the insurance industry that insures aquaculture, 35% of it calls this RAS, recirculating systems, risky, and says people don't even want to insure them. And the company that was going to build the facility, the RAS system, went bankrupt just in September. And so there's a high probability of mass die-offs and other things that could actually leave us with a big burden.
The only thing I got free for this is a cold from the public. But anyway, it's important to, school and county budgets are probably 80% of what our taxes are that we get billed for every year. And it's important that if we have a company like this come to Belfast, that we get every penny of taxes that we deserve from that company. And if I'm elected, that's something I'm going to be focused on. We need help in this community, and it's serious. But a lot of our tax base is the school and the county, and Belfast government has done very well holding our taxes where they are. Thank you.
Well, that's a question that I've really had. You know, how do we know this is going to lower our taxes? I don't know how anybody could know that standing here tonight. I'm also concerned that if we get increased revenue from a big business that comes, don't we lose some state funding and then have to just contribute more of our own money? I've heard that that might be the case. Also, it's going to be a long time coming. This is going to be a project that takes a long time to build and a long time to get up to full production. I'm also concerned about the stress on the infrastructure of having a bigger business here. I think that that may be more realistic than people realize. And the extra tax money that we get might have to go to pay for that extra infrastructure.
So I think one of the misunderstandings is that this may not mean a tax reduction as you sit and see it today on paper. What it might mean is that taxes don't go up in the future. We have a struggle every year trying to maintain the miles of roads and sidewalks and all the various infrastructures that we enjoy in terms of services in this town. They cost more each year. The state is taking away revenue from us each year and putting more demands on us that they don't fund. And we have to find a way to support that each year. So this is very important revenue that could start as soon as 2 years from now and grow from there. And it would mean that we would have funds to take care of and maintain things we have and need to take care of.
Well, I won't repeat some of the things that have been said. Rather, I will say that I'm confused why this community would make a mistake along the lines of mistakes we've made in the past. And that is hanging our hopes on one large industry to kind of fix all of our problems in the tax revenue department. I would rather, as a city council, attract 10 or 15 small to middle-sized industries that were also more matched to who we are, what our values are, and what the things are that bring people to Belfast in the first place, which is our natural resources, our beauty, and our authentic kind of creative entrepreneurship here. And so I don't think we can just hold this out as the big fix-it. This is going to be a slow process, and we need a lot of minds thinking about it.
You're listening to the City Council Candidates Forum, held October 22nd, 2018, at the Boathouse. This is Belfast Community Radio. We'll be back in a moment with the second part.